This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And joining us is Michael Schonduger of The Athletic. And, of course, a big game tomorrow. And, of course, injuries have to be a concern. And you know the concern there had to be with the way the play is in the secondary. What expectations do you have, Michael Schon, as far as how this team defensively is going to match up against the Chiefs?
Well, I think they're in a lot better shape that Bradley's playing, because I think a lineup of like Shalom Luani at free safety and Delino Hill at a strong safety, with both of them, I think, will be making their first career starts. Maybe Delino has one, but our baby Shalom has one in Oakland, but they'd be pretty new, I guess, is the gist of that. So I'd be pretty concerned if that was the lineup on prime time against a good quarterback like Mahomes. But with Bradley back there, a little bit better, even if he is playing free safety, the position he's not as comfortable with, but he's still pretty good at. I mean, probably just as good as Tedrick, you know, to be honest. The thing is, he's starting at strong safety because he's better at strong safety than Delano is, right? So they had to, you know, put him there. But with Bradley back there, feel a little bit better, but still not great, because this unit has just been so inconsistent. They had games like the Vikings game that was great. You know, the second half of the Chargers game was phenomenal. I don't think Chargers scored any points offensively. Even the second half against Aaron Rodgers, save for that big pass to Devontae Adams, they've had some moments, right? And then they give up 400 yards to Nick Mullins, and then give up another 275 to Nick Mullins. Maybe it's just not play Nick Mullins, I guess. Yeah. Kind of talking through that. That's the answer. Don't play
Nick Mullins. Nick Mullins, yeah. I think that could be the key.
Killer.
Yeah, you know, that has been an issue. There's no question about it. And, you know, it's interesting to see the McDougal thing, because, again, he's been fighting that off and on now, that knee injury, I think, for more than a year.
Yeah, and he's just one of those guys who's a warrior. You know, he comes from the school, you know, he comes from the same cloth. I think I wrote this as Frank, you know, Russell, Sherman, you know, even Mike Bennett was like that to an extent, where, you know, it takes something bad for them to miss time, like something real bad, almost to the point where they probably argue with the trainers pregame before just being told, you know, someone just pulls rank. You know, it requires that type of, like, pain for them not to play. You know, for Sherman to play with bad knees the way he did, and through bad elbows and the bad Achilles, and, you know, Mike Bennett to do similar stuff, and Frank to play all year with bad hands. Like, Bradley's one of those guys. And he's a... mentally, he's one of those guys where he feels like he's letting you down if he's not out there. You know, Bradley's their emotional leader in addition to being like their vet leader. Like, before they take the field, the last voice they hear is Bradley. You know, that's really important to him and to those guys. So, you know, he feels like he's doing them a disservice by not playing. So that's why, and Sherman kind of felt the same way. And the last voice before they went out on the field was Sherman's. You know, so that's why he's been able to just battle through that. And it doesn't surprise me that he's able to battle through it this week.
No, that's, and I think that's the good part. But what you talk about battling through, what a battling year it's been for Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, and it's not just physical for him. The physical is almost like just kicking a man while he's down, in a weird way to put it, you know, because Doug's a very emotional player. He'll tell
right.
you this, emotional dude, you know. So I think a couple weeks ago when, you know, we were all rehashing Sherm stories and things like that, you know, I asked him, you know, how did that impact you on top of them trading Jermaine, right? Because you look at this last few years, you know, they trade Jermaine, right? They let Paul Richardson walk, and then they cut Richard Sherman. And it's just like, you know, I don't know how many listeners are big fans of The Fresh Prince, but there's a episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the TV show, where Will Smith is just eventually standing there in the house by himself. I think it might be the season finale. The house is just empty, and he's just standing there looking all sad. You know, without Tyler, you might be getting a scenario like that with Doug, right? Because they're just getting rid of all his friends and, you know, his best friends. You know, there's still a picture of Jermaine in Doug's locker, right? Like,
right.
Doug still practices in, like, Richard Sherman shoes, right? Like Nike shoes, I believe. So, I mean, that had an emotional impact, too. And then on top of that, you tack on knee injuries, right? That, that's rough. So I know there was lots of emotion for him this last week to really contribute. Doug wants to contribute to the team. Not only does he want to have a good year because he's coming back, he's coming off of, like, I think, 3 straight 1,000-yard seasons. He just wants to be part of the fun, the celebrations, the contributing to a winning team. you know. So it's been a struggle for him, but I think he's feeling better. And I think, you know, the thing with Doug is, you know, if he's on the field, he's going to give you his best, whether he's hurt or not. So that's the thing you can rely on from a guy like Doug.
Oh, no question. And, of course, I mean, how weird is it you hear these stories about, oh, yeah, well, they're going to cut him next year. It's like, hey, they need him next year.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So Doug's in a weird spot, like almost like Michael Bennett was to an extent. He's not eating up as much money, I don't think. I don't think they save. I think they might save a little bit more cutting Doug than they did by trading Bennett. But it's like, you trade Bennett, all right, now where's your pass rush come from? It took like a month for them to get a pass rush, right, without Michael Bennett, right? And then, meanwhile, Michael Bennett's still really good. You know, you look at these games that they've had without Doug this year, the numbers aren't as good. Russell's numbers aren't as good. You know, the other guys aren't as impactful. You know, like, it's not just like, you can just, all right, cool, we get rid of Doug, we get some cheaper options, we figure it out. No. Doug Baldwin matters. I think when Earl Thomas had his first interception against Denver, the first thing I tweeted was, Earl Thomas matters, right? Because he does. These dudes matter. Star players matter. They're stars for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, Sherman matters. You know, Cam matters. You know, look at the replacement players they've had since some of these guys. It's not working out right away, at least. You know, and there's a reason for that. Those guys were elite talents, and Michael and Sherman are still being elite talents. Where they're at. And I imagine if Doug wasn't here, he'd go somewhere and be elite again. You know, that's how good these dudes are. So, like, mathematically, yeah, there's probably a scenario in which Doug's not on the team anymore. But, I mean, you look at what they'd have left after that, and it wouldn't be as good as if Doug was here. That's just plain and simple.
No question. I think, again, he is so valuable to the team. It does look like, I don't know, what's it look like as far as Rashad Penny? Do you kind of feel if he's going to be active or not?
It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like the running backs have the same, I don't want to say that they don't have the same warrior-like attitude, because, like, CJ ProSize has it, for example. Like, it takes a lot to get CJ off the field, like, pain-wise. He's just been in a lot of pain.
Right.
But if you notice, the running backs haven't battled through the injuries over, like, the past couple years the same way. You know, CJ's been thrown on IR, I think, twice. Even Mike Davis played was active for 7 or 9 games last year and still missed the Niners game on the road last year with, I think, a rib injury. You know, we've seen Chris Carson miss games. Rashad, you know, those guys, when it seems like the threshold or what the training staff is willing to allow to throw them back out there, especially at a position where they're just taking hits every play. You know, you play running back, the play isn't over until you take a hit, unless you're Chris Carson jumping over people. So when the running backs are questionable, that's when I have a little less, like, optimism that they'll play. So I wouldn't expect to see Rashad out there Sunday night.
Now, what about DJ Fluker?
DJ's another one. O-line's been kind of weird, too, to be honest. Because maybe just, I don't know, Pete Carroll likes to joke about how big the body parts are on them that's injured. Like, he jokes how big DJ Fluker's hamstring is. And he's another one I'm not too sure about. When guys don't really practice, I don't feel too confident, unless it's someone like a veteran, like, you know, Dwayne Brown or Doug Baldwin, even the times that Michael Bennett didn't practice. I feel much better about Jermaine playing than DJ. Also, I think they feel like they have more reliable options at, you know, at interior line than they do maybe at tackle. So I would expect Jermaine to play. DJ feels more like just a genuine 50-50 toss-up.
Right. And, of course, if he doesn't, I mean, Ethan Posick struggled trying to fill in for him.
Yeah, no, see, that's where this gets kind of tricky. You have to decide, and I think the Seahawks may have decided this in a way too, is that, like, is a hobbled DJ better than a full strength Ethan? Like, I think they thought about that in the same way as, like, is a hobbled Bradley better than whoever else we would put out there at his spot, right? And I think a hobbled DJ kind of battling through the hammy is probably better than whoever else, you know, they would put out there. That this includes Ethan, because, yeah, I mean, Ethan played what? He's 30 snaps against the Niners and had 2 holding penalties. 30 snaps, that's bad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when Pete Carroll calls a dude out or says a dude was bad immediately after the game, then he wasn't good. You know, that's anybody who's kind of been around Pete Carroll enough and sat through enough of his Pete speak knows. Usually when there's a replacement dude, he usually says, I got to watch the film. He did okay. Yeah, he hopped in there all right. Or, you know, he's like, he's effusive with his praise. He's like, ah, yeah, he was wonderful. Credit to him for stepping in. He's done that in the past with guys like Joey Hunt, Jordan Simmons. But no, with Ethan, it was just, oh, how'd Ethan do? Oh, yep, struggled. Not good. Like, oh, that's not really the endorsement you want from a guy. What, they took him in the second round? That's not good. So maybe he can turn it around. Maybe the matchup just wasn't great. You know, they feel good about Joey Hunt. If Joey Hunt has to play, the gap between Joey and Ethan seems to be significant at this point. So if Joey is in there, maybe they can toy with how they do things on Sunday night. But yeah, they really need DJ, I think.
Yeah, because I think they just need his presence along with his leadership, and I think they need his energy more than anything else.
Yeah, DJ, for a guy that doesn't talk a bunch, when you talk to him around his teammates, he's just super fiery, like just running around, just giving, encouraging guys, talking crap. Like, that's in the O-line group. I didn't realize how important that something like that would be, right? Especially since a lot of those guys look up to a guy like Dwayne, who was pretty reserved for the most part. Like, he'll get fired up, like, on the field after a big play, but it's just like, DJ seems like the guy who will fire you up before the big play, which is very significant, because especially when your offense is out of rhythm, you know, yeah, you can have Russell coming over and say, yeah, next drive, we got this, right? But he says that every drive,
right?
Or, you know, Solari might say that, or he might just say something cheesy like, yeah, you know, this is why we practice. We do this every day. It's like, all right, cool, whatever. But DJ maybe will know how to lighten the mood or bring the right energy that kickstart things. And you're right, that is important. Not that he can't give it, you know, on the sideline, even if he's not suited up, but it's different when he says, all right, guys, let's go run the ball down their bleeping throats. And then he's out there running the ball down their bleeping throats with you. That's a bit of a difference.
I know one thing they're going to be trying to do is get Chris Carson over 1,000 yards. What a great addition he's now been for the last 2 years.
And he's been a value pick. And that's the huge thing, right? That's why the Rashad Penny thing was so interesting. It's because, like, you got probably the best value you're going to get out of a running back position. I mean, you could get an undrafted guy, but you get a dude in the seventh. I mean, that's just as good, right, as an undrafted cat to be your starter and to just be so versatile. It's not like he's only a first and second down back who can just bruise people. Nah, Chris will run around dudes, break runs outside. He'll jump over the dude. He'll go through a dude on the goal line, and then he can catch. And you got all that in the seventh round. You know, like, that's – and then right after that, you go spend a first-round pick on the same position. That was kind of weird by the organization. But speaking just to Chris is a really elite talent, I think. The way the first guy has no shot against Chris. Like, in terms of starting running backs, I was looking it up the other day with Ben at the PI. In terms of yards after contact and, like, percentage of yards that come after the first guy gets to you, like, Chris is one of the best in the league, right? Mm-hmm. It was, like, him and Saquon and I think, like, Zeke, maybe. Like, he's right up there with, like, first-round picks, right? So Chris is special. Like, you can see why Pete loves this dude so much, not just because he's, like, tough, but he sees, like, oh, man, we got a special cat, and we're paying him, you know, pennies, you know, compared to what they're paying a guy like Penny, no pun intended.
Right. But that's going to be interesting to see. And, of course, it's been a great year for Tyler Lockett. I mean, he's really come on strong as a receiver, making big plays.
Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this before. Did I mention that he doesn't take notes at work? Have I said that up here?
No, you did not.
Because that – I was doing a story on him, and I was like – everyone was like, yeah, I've never seen him take notes. He just has it all memorized. And I was like, what? That, like, the receiver position is not – like, simple, you know, especially all, like, the reads you got to make and all the scramble stuff when you're playing with a guy like Russell. Like, and apparently he doesn't just have a knowledge of, like, what he's supposed to do. He knows what, like, David's supposed to do and Jerron's supposed to do and where Doug's going to be. And then he knows to where to break stuff off of. And, like, he knows how to exploit the different guys they have, that the opponent has. Like, I'm like, he has all that memorized? It's like, that's pretty, like, his brain is different in that way. And then I learned that apparently he just he's just on his tablet so much, just going over stuff that, yeah, by the time he gets to the meetings, it's just like, yep, got it. And apparently he also like dedicates a day of practice to something just like different. Like one day it'll be his releases. Then the next day it'll be just catching everything with just his hands, or, you know, just little stuff like that every day. Like these are the type of things you hear when, you know, people start to talk about the work ethic of like the elite guys that go down all time, you know, the Fitzgeralds and their work ethics each day, and just kind of those kind of God-given things that they combine with the work ethic that turns them into an elite receiver. Because you want to rank him against some of the best dudes in the league too. He's just as efficient as them. He doesn't have the numbers, like touchdowns are good, but I think he's only what, like 50 catches. But in terms of how often the ball is thrown to him versus how often he catches it, I think the only person better in the league is Michael Thomas. Like, look at that name, Michael Thomas, one of the best receivers in the league, and then right. Boom, you know, Tyler Lockett. Like, he and Russell are combined having just like an efficient year, and that's really important in an offense where you're not getting that many opportunities. Like, they're being really explosive with just minimal opportunities.
No, it's good. It should be a fun game tomorrow night. So what do we have on The Athletic?
What did I just write this week? Oh, if you haven't checked out my Tyler piece, he's really interesting cat. Like, my Tyler Lockett piece is up. I actually did a fun one. John, you've been around the league, so you probably heard a bunch of stories like these. I asked everyone about their rookie dinners.
Okay.
It's just a fun little lighthearted thing, but whoo, man, it'll make you feel broken, a heartbeat, if you find out that Nas Jones had to drop $7,000 on drinks and the DBs ran up a $10,000 tab eating steak and lobster. Oh, man, the rookie hazing is crazy in Seattle. And also, what did I just drop? Oh, Shaquem Griffin. It was interesting talking to Shaquem last week about how he's gone from, you know, the star of the NFL draft to starting week one to now never starting again his rookie season. That's a interesting kind of career arc he's already having there. So all three of those are up on The Athletic. You know, we always got great stuff on there. Go check all that out. And we got a new Seahawks Man to Man podcast up right now with Nate Taylor, who covers the Chiefs for The Athletic. One of my favorite episodes we've done this year. Super fun, super insightful on just how dope Patrick Mahomes is. So all that's up now. You can always find the podcast on my Twitter at Mike Dugar. It's always pinned to the top of my page.
All right. Well, looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. And, of course, have a good holiday after that. And, of course, football coming up. It's Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic. Thanks. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Take your phone calls next. It's The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dre. Dre, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, man. John, and yeah, I remember back in the days when Mr. Burl Ives used to live up in Anacortes, back in the days, singing that Silver and Gold, and Merry Christmas to you and Pat, and yeah, enjoy the holidays. And when it comes to the Seahawks, you know, the three-back running system, I didn't know what to expect this year. I had to tip my hat off to Pete Carroll and those guys, because I guess they knew what they were doing. The only thing that frustrates me, as you saw down in San Francisco, is the short yardage situation. When it comes down to the third and one, third and twos, you know, they passed it on one down early, I think, in the first half, and it didn't converge on it, get a first down. And the frustrating thing to me is, you know, they have such a great running game, and then when it comes to short yardage, it's, like, tough for them to get that first down. And when you see Michael Dixon, you know, punting at the 50-yard line, it's something you don't want to do, and we don't want to see, I should say. And he did it a couple times in the first half against San Francisco. And, I think they need to block better, when it comes to the short yardage, because it's going to come crucial, down the stretch run, especially if you make the playoffs and it could cost you from extending a drive to getting points on the board to not getting points on the board. And it takes those possessions are crucial, and it gets magnified, especially when the playoffs come. And, you know, I was thinking about you, Rich Rashard Penny, and, you know, the Seahawks, you know, they had a chance to get, I was thinking who went to pick before them, but I think they could have traded up and it's got them if they wanted to. It was Derwin James of the San Diego Chargers. who's a Cam Chancellor type of a talent. And I think we're going to look. We're going to watch both of their careers, Penny and Derwin James, and look at make him break out, come out even. Because I think they're spoon feeding Rashard Penny to where, you know, he's going to get like 500 yards this year or close to it, to where they can when it may become the feature back in a couple years down the road. But we'll see. Because Chris Carson, I'm not sure his running style is. I'm not sure if he can hold up for 16 games every year, to where now you have a balance. You have a guy, Rashard Penny, who can also come in and get the job done. But as far as the Seahawks and the Kansas City Chiefs game tomorrow, I think the Seahawks can't be kicking field goals against the Chiefs. When you get into the red zone, you got to get touchdowns, and you got, like we said, convert on third down, especially third and short, the manageable downs. You got to convert and keep those pass rushers, Justin Houston, those guys, from getting to Russell Wilson. And how do you stop those guys? Have them hesitate and pause. Well, you control the running game, control the clock, and keep those guys tired and out of breath, and work the play action. Because once you run the football, the play action works really great. And when it comes to – let me switch gears to baseball real quick, because I heard Curtis Rogers say last week that I'm surprised they didn't get they didn't trade Mitch Haniger. That's a 5-2 baseball player. You got to build around guys like Mitch Haniger and not trade guys like Mitch Haniger. And you see this guy they got from the Milwaukee Brewers. Hopefully he pans out in the outfield. I think the Mariners may have one of the greatest outfields in the American League next year, minus Jay Bruce out there. But I think this team, to me, what they're doing is tearing it down, John Clayton, is because of what the Oakland A's did last year. What the Oakland A's did with the low payroll and hungry guys, gritty, gutty guys. Yes, they called up from their Florida system. The guys like Chapman played third base. You got Olsen plays first base. And you got Chris Davis, who's in his last year of his contract with the Oakland A's. Yes, he came from the Milwaukee Brewers, but you build around those guys, and you saw how they passed up the Seattle Mariners throughout the season last year, to where you're like, wait a minute. These guys passed us up with basically almost the same amount of talent that we have, and they passed us up in a dramatic type of way where they played almost like 700 baseball for like 3 months. And it was mind-boggling to watch, where they felt that, hey, we can do the same thing with lesser talent, with lower payroll, and get the job done. Yes, you may take a step back and win 75 games in 2019, but it's going to pay off later on, 2 or 3 years down the line. But we'll wait and see. But I think that's the philosophy that they saw what the Oakland A's did, had this team tearing it down this year, and looking forward for the next 3 or 4 years after 2019.
And, of course, I mean, knowing that whatever the A's do with the success, it's not going to be for long, because, you know, they don't have the payroll to be able to, or they don't have the money resources to be able to keep a lot of those guys. And so, I'm still not all in on this one. I still think that there's too many teams. They're one of 11 teams that are tanking it. 11 teams. And that means, right, you look in the American League, there's only six teams that are any good, because there's so many more teams in the American League tearing it down. And so, I don't know. I mean, again, just the fact that it's going to be over two decades for this team to make the playoffs, that to me is worrisome.
Yeah, and you were that close last year. And unfortunately, it started on July 6th when the Colorado Rockies came to town to give you a wake-up call and told you you're not really as good as you thought you were. But to me, John, it's just really hard to even fathom that you were that good for 3 months out of the gate and that bad for the last 3 months. People say, oh, they played over their head. Well, they had talent also. Mm-hmm. The talent won those games for the first 3 months. That talent, yes, the pitching, they hit a wall. I feel like, you know, the pitching and the offense all hit a wall all at the same time, and I still feel Scott Service did the waited too long to put Mitch Haniger in the leadoff spot. A month too long, but just wait and see. I just feel that they had the talent. I just feel they did a few pieces here and there, I think, could have got them over the hump this coming up year, but we'll just wait and see. Yes, Kings taking in the NBA, too, I think, to get Zion Williams from Duke. You could say the Phoenix Suns, Chicago Bulls, and the Cleveland Cavaliers, but we'll just wait and see how this all develops, because, hey, a lot of like, we didn't know about this running game with the Seahawks, and look what happened. They got guys, two 500-yard basically running backs and a 1,000-yard running back. And a quarterback that's about to get like 350, 375 yards, so rushing. So it's all worked out for them, but we got to wait and see how it all develops when it comes to the Seahawks and making the playoffs.
But back to your point on Haniger, I agree with you 100%. Because, and I think, you know, when we're talking to Gary Hill earlier, I think he raises a good point, too, because, you know, you figured that Haniger will now move into the Malik Smith will probably be leadoff. And then you've got, right. You know, Haniger batting third. And when you think about when you take out, you know, a number three and a number four hitter out of your lineup, like in Cruz and Cano, how are you going to be able to replace them? So at least they got somewhat of a replacement. But again, you're right. Trading Haniger, that would have been too much.
It would have been way too much. It would have been saying that, you know, it's one of those things to where you're like, that was a complete rebuild to where that I don't think the fans are going to show up. Nobody's going to show up. No matter how many giveaways that you give at the ballpark, people are just going to be upset and pissed off if you tear down what you shouldn't tear. When you already won 89 games, that you could have easily won 95, 97 games. So, Mitch Haniger is one of those guys that come a rarity. They got a 5-2 player that can do it all at the plate, and he should have got a Gold Glove, John Clayton. Mm-hmm. Not the three guys that were competing for a Gold Glove in right field should have been Mitch Haniger. Should have won it hands down with all the assists that he had. It shouldn't have been those guys, Aaron Judge, Calhoun, and Mookie Betts. I believe were the three finalists, but I think Mitch Haniger deservedly should have won a Gold Glove, or should have been considered in those top three. I think. Yeah, I was just so upset about that. But he's one of those guys you have to build around. He's a talent that comes around once in a lifetime to me, and he's young. And, yes, you have him at least till 2021, and you can probably re-sign him to me, 2021 or 2022, I think. It's somebody that, like I said, when I saw him first at the plate, I was like, man, guys like him. And it come around really rare. And Kyle Seager, he strikes out way too much in the past few years. And I think they're going to have to drop him down in the lineup and see. You probably see him at number five or number six in the lineup, I think, coming up here. Because his strikeout total was way too much and his walks are way too down.
That sounds good. Hey, thank you for the phone call. And Merry Christmas.
Thank you. And thank Merry Christmas. Tell Pat I said hello.
I'll do that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Load up those phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The, two football games today both have major consequences, really, in both conferences, because Tennessee is fighting for a playoff spot. They take on Washington. Washington's barely holding on. And, of course, Seattle has to watch that game, because if indeed the Redskins lose, that pretty well wipes them out of the picture, because that gives them their eighth loss. Same thing with Philadelphia tomorrow against Houston. So that's where the AFC South can really help out the Seahawks in taking care of two of the main teams that they're fighting against. Minnesota, of course, they're fighting to a degree against, but, you know, Minnesota's sitting in the sixth hole. Seattle is sitting right now at number five. The other game, of course, big one is the Chargers going against the Baltimore Ravens, and the Ravens, you know, fighting to see if they can stay in that race for the wild card, because if not, they may have to concede and lose over to a team like the Indianapolis Colts, a team that is just absolutely red hot. So stay tuned on that one. But overall, going to be kind of a fun day here to see. And the first game, I think, starts at about 1:30. So see how that goes. But overall, just give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Steve in Burien. Hey, Steve.
Hey, John.
Yes.
Real quick, when it comes to baseball, I'm waiting for the time when they make the pass ball and the wild pitch a live ball for the batter. Every other guy on base could take off on a wild pitch or, you know, pass ball, but the batter has to sit there and just stand and watch. Mm-hmm. I think the batter should be able to take off for first base if he wants to. If he makes the move, he's committed, then they throw him out if they get him out, you know. And also, when it comes to football, they listen to me. You saw Lockett last week trailing behind Wilson for the lateral. I definitely want to see more of that. You know, just have a pitch out and let the guy go downfield. You saw it in the Miami win or the Jet win, whichever, they had the three laterals.
Right.
Instead of a desperation play, I think they need to just, you know, put that into part of the game plan. Because you see when a quarterback starts his slide or goes into the slide, the defenders always slow up and pull back because they're not going to hit him. So just before he starts that slide, if you got a trailer off to the left or to the right, you know, and those guys are slowing down, he's going full speed, quarterback pitches that ball, boom, he's gone down the sidelines.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, it is kind of it's funny because, again, I know that early in the season there seemed to be such criticism of Brian Schottenheimer for not being creative. But what you're talking about with the jet sweep that they do with Lockett, and they get him the ball trailing, and of course they they're still one of the foremost teams as far as, you know, doing the RPOs, run pass options, and now they're even getting, you know, more chances for Russell to run because he is running the ball more. That has been very good.
Well, you don't just use Lockett. You use any receiver, anybody that trails. It's the same thing when a guy, say, is taken off for a long run and the defender's catching up to him. Why try and block for the guy? Instead of trying to block for the guy, get distance so when he gets tackled before he goes down, he can just flip the ball to you. Yeah, I'm really, you know, I enjoy watching the old football from the face mask, no face mask days from the 20s and 30s. When you watch the old Notre Dame games,
right?
And you watch the old football, it was all lateral. Just before the guy got tackled, it's like rugby: lateral the ball, lateral the ball, lateral the ball. It makes it exciting, and you've got the guys are so talented now that they can do it. In the old days, the hands weren't there; the guys were slower. But now, with the athleticism of these guys, it's just one more facet of the game to make it more exciting.
Well, I'm glad to see you're enjoying that. See how it continues to evolve, and let's put it this way: you have to admit this is one of the most creative times for offense in the league that we've seen. Just because what we're watching now is so many young minds out there trying to change the game and incorporating a lot of the college plays. It does make for an exciting time.
Yeah, and like I say, these guys are athletic, more athletic now, and they're able to do it. The hands are better. And I think just be, I'm just waiting for somebody to incorporate that into their offense. When you have, like I say, you got a running quarterback, don't try and block for him. Just create distance and space. And then also, then it forces the defense to sit there and adjust their game. Like, is he going to lateral? Now do we have to cover that guy? And then it opens up more angles and more open spots for other things to happen. So I just hope I see more of it, and you have a good holidays and a Merry Christmas, John.
Hey, thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It is a creative time right now, and of course, when you talk creative, I mean, watch what we see tomorrow from Andy Reid and his staff, because they just do such a great job of, creating new type of plays and, being on top of it, and that's going to be the challenge for the defense, because it will not be an easy task to be able to do that, because, they do so many good things with their offense. And again, Patrick Mahomes is an absolute delight to watch. He is that good. I mean, a player that I think you can see is going to have greatness for a long period of time and be a big problem for all these teams in the AFC to try to contain. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Come back and continue with your phone calls. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. And Matt, Merry Christmas to you. Have a great holiday. And of course, we are taking your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Commando Dave. David, how are you?
Hey, yo-ho-ho and a barrel of rum and eggnog. I mean, ho-ho-ho, Merry Christmas, John Clayton, Mrs. Clayton, the John Clayton Show crew, the John Clayton Show listeners, Clayton callers, and all of my Clayton cronies. It's always good to be on the John Clayton Show with the professor during football season, especially a week, sweet 16 showdown with the Kansas City Chiefs in town, especially since last week on the road, the Seahawks reconfirmed John Clayton that they are the Ike and Tina Turner of the NFL. They can't do anything nice and easy. They got to do everything nice and rough. And as a result, like all fans, I just hope the Hawks don't go rolling down the river. And speaking of nice and rough, John Clayton, I was both last week busting the chops of the great Gazoo all-green uniforms of the Hawks. But, John Clayton, I got to say this. I do appreciate and want to give a shout-out to all the Seahawks fans who traveled this season representing the 12th man in stadiums across the NFL, and the ones with all-green really stood out. So thank you for your dedication and your commitment. And the funny thing about it, John Clayton, my girl Colette Hinkle scolded me about my rant last week because she loves those green uniforms, as does my sister you met. But the funnier thing, John Clayton, was the Mariners told the Seahawks to hold their beer and put out photos showing the entire park will be dressed up like the Pink Panther this spring. To paraphrase Morris the Barber in Coming to America, who was paraphrasing the late boxing champion Floyd Patterson, his mama called him Safeco Field. I'm going to call him Safeco Field. Now, John Clayton, you asked Jet if the New York Jets have ever had a Merry Christmas, and I drove into a parking garage and missed his answer, but I trust he mentioned the December 6th, 1998, in New York, when the referees put a gift under the tree, and when the Jets unwrapped it, Vinny Testaverde was pulling a touchdown out of the stocking. But the Seahawks got the bigger gift, John Clayton, which was the Super Bowl 48 title after the domino effect of the Seahawks head coach, Dennis Erickson getting fired. And continuing on the Christmas theme, John Clayton, I've got some NFL Yuletide questions for you. Who are your three wise men this season, John Clayton? Not coaches of the year, but three coaches who have really come up with some really intriguing schemes this season.
Yeah, Andy Reid, Doug Peterson. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe not as Doug, but I mean, certainly Sean McVay and Matt Nagy. So let's put Doug aside. But for this year, because, again, it has not been as good as a year as their Super Bowl year. But Andy Reid, with all the play calling with Matt Mahomes, all the things that Sean McVay does, and what Matt Nagy's been able to do with Mitchell Trubisky.
Who's the Frosty the Snowman, John Clayton? What playoff team do you expect?
Well, Bob Wiley's Frosty the Snowman. Bob Wiley's Frosty the Snowman because, I mean, but unfortunately he broke his ankle this week, and so I guess he's listed as questionable.
Who's the Grinch? What team is most likely to steal a game in the next 2 weeks?
I was going to say the Grinch would be John Gruden with what he's done for Raider fans. So if we're going a different direction with the Grinch, then I'd have to say that, Houston's a better team, so you can't say that that's going to be a bad team that sneaks in there. Now Tennessee, would you consider them to be Grinchy? Because they could knock out they could knock out some teams. They could knock out Washington.
There you go. And who's the Santa's elves? What team has all the tools but is just not big enough this season, John Clayton?
I'd say Houston because particularly the offensive line, I mean, that's where they're deficient, and that's a good team with a good defense and a great young quarterback. But, at the best, I think they can only win one home game in the playoffs.
And lastly, John Clayton, I know this is the Cougar Station, so good luck to the WSU Cougars next week in the Alamo Bowl. Stop by Fitzgerald's in Ballard, the biggest Cougar bar in Seattle, if you get a chance, John Clayton. Go Seahawks rock and roll. Merry Christmas, John Clayton.
Hey, Merry Christmas. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Steve. Hey, Steve.
Hi, John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm good. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, I've been trying to toss this around with friends of mine. I played a lot of ball, and right now they're trying to speed up the game in baseball, and they don't want to impact the records and stuff, doing things that I think that if you change it, so if you throw over to first base and you don't get the guy out, it's a ball. I think that would speed up the game. Less pitchers would throw over there, because that seems to take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. All day long to keep throwing to first,
Right.
Also, it would increase the scoring because more guys would run.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been trying to, I've texted this to Michael Wilbon because he's a big fanatic of the game taking too long.
Right.
Ways to speed it up and I don't know. What do you think of that?
I guess it's a thought. It just seems to leave, because, again, I guess what I still think is that they've really got to study some of the positioning things that they do right now, that the analytics, because, again, what it comes down to is that, and again, it's like it's strikeouts, it's walks, it's home runs. That's about it. I mean, that's what the game has evolved to. And what you would like is a little bit more athleticism. At least what you're talking about could bring in a little bit more athleticism, because now, if you only throw to first base one or two times, and the guy may run a little bit more, and maybe that'll change the game to a certain degree. But
more scoring
has got to be the key. There's no doubt. Also, I mean, more contact, more athleticism. That's the thing I think is missing right now.
Yeah, I think I need to find some way to, less commercials.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. That one's not going to change, because the commercials sell, right, and they want the money from that, and that's understandable. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Everybody have a great Christmas. I'll be back at Monday at 10 o'clock, and, of course, got the game tomorrow night. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.